Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Meta. I'm your host, Jay Larson, and joining me this week is the very special guest, Ben Hampshire. Hello, Ben. How are you doing?
No, I'm not too bad. Not too bad. Looking forward to ranting about Grimkin, which is what I believe I'm doing today.
Excellent. Well, you should have plenty of opportunities to do that. So, first off, could you maybe go ahead and give an introduction of yourself to the listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Ben. I've been playing in general for a long time. I started trying to play competitively when Grimkin came out in 2017. I made the England WTC team in 2018, where we came third. I also won Gen Con that year and made a few finals. And then I played again for the WTC in 2019, and we went 4-2 and came something. I honestly don't remember. And then more recently, I've been working with Night Machine, producing articles and our podcast and streaming on Wartable. In that time, I've mostly played Grimkin. I've also dabbled in Kador and Crucible Guard and most recently Prix.
Okay. How long have you been doing War Machine and Hordes?
I think that I bought my first models in about 2010, but I played maybe one or two games with my dad and then didn't pick it up again. I started actually playing, I think, in 2015.
Okay. And are there any other types of gaming that you're a big fan of, or are you mainly an enthusiast of War Machine and Hordes?
No, I do all sorts. I started with Warhammer Fantasy, then came to War Machine and Hordes. I do a lot of historical gaming, Napoleonics, mostly Black Powder, some World War II stuff with Bolt Action, and I also play a little bit of 40k on the side. The most exciting thing I've done in any of those was I did a 20,000 miniature recreation of the Battle of Waterloo last year in 28mm scale.
Okay.
Which was a lot of things. But the only game I play, like, quote-unquote, seriously is War Machine.
All right. Well, real quick, a review of the format. We will do about 45 or 50 minutes of me interviewing you, asking questions. That'll be the main episode. And then the bonus episode will be also 45 or 50 minutes, and that'll be for people who are supporting us on Patreon.
Okay.
So, starting off, we're going to have a bunch of questions from our Patreon supporters, and I asked them to give questions for you and about Grimkin. And so here we go.
Can I clarify one thing? How much am I allowed to swear?
Usually people don't swear too much, but, you know, I understand that, when I have Australian or British guests on that, sometimes.
Yeah, for sure. Okay.
All bets are off.
Try and avoid words beginning with C. Got it.
All right. So David says, I'm pretty interested in hearing Ben's takes on how Grimkin fits in today's meta, with Gatsby 4 and Archons popping up everywhere. And most importantly, can Grimkin build anything into Siege? So I guess let's start with Asphyxius 4 and the Archons first.
Okay, in general, I think that Grimkin aren't in a great place. Asphyxius 4 doesn't seem the most problematic. Like, I feel like he just trades and dies in the context of these matchups. Like, he doesn't threat super far. Bloodthirst is only relevant against some of our beasts, and he's out-threated by Nayslayer anyway, unless he's flickering. Archons are spooky. I think that the Thamorites are annoying for playing into DM. They kill Gremlin Swarms. They're amazing into bump, because they just hose any Nayslayer that don't feign death. They hose all the infantry. Voids are obviously really good into both of our themes. And I think that, like, we can, like, the Archons are killable for Grimkin, but they're not things you can go out and get in the same way that you can just, like, send a Clockatrice in to spray a solo down. Like, you have to let them commit and kill something. That's not great.
What do you think are, I guess, some of the issues that that Grimkin's facing in the current meta, and what are you, I guess, kind of trying to do to try to combat those?
Okay. So I'm low-key writing off the Infernals matchup. I think that it's really difficult to play with Dark Menagerie, because their list is the same thing as yours, but has more resources to do it, which is play a long game, grind to turn 7 with efficient heavies. And my original theory when the faction came out was that you played King of Nothing and just targeted the support. But I think that we've seen good Infernals players learn not to need the support as much. And at that point, I think that it's going to be really hard to deliver enough Naysayers in bump to actually kill Omidamos' Tormentors, say. So I think that you kind of have to accept that Infernals is a write-off against a good Infernals player, but you can probably beat the medium to bad Infernals players just because you'll have practiced your list a lot and Infernals are very complicated. Aside from that, I think Flames is probably a really hard game, especially if they bring any Advocates. And I'd also be worried about stuff like Vlad 2 Doomreavers is pretty spooky. I think that Mercs, even without Flames, like, Fiona is generally decent at pulling apart the brick, and, like, Mercs have so many tools into so many matchups that they can probably just handle bump. And also Strange Bedfellows is going to be scary. Like, all the new stuff is just going to be really difficult for both of the Grimkin teams. Like, it's fast, hard-hitting infantry that's going to be good into Dark Menagerie because it will hit your brick before you can do anything. And like, the traditional plays into that kind of don't work when stuff is as fast as it is now. And, like, most teams now just trivially clean up stuff like Naysayers because of access to Void Archons everywhere and the number of sprays in the game.
So, it is kind of interesting how it wasn't that long ago where, you know, I've been doing this podcast for a while, and a lot of times I'll ask people, you know, what's your opinion of, like, tier rankings of the factions, or where do people stand? And it wasn't that long ago when Grimkin was one of the top dogs, and, nope, and people were freaked out about Clockatrices and, you know, et cetera. And it's been a really, it feels like it's pretty common in the meta cycle for someone who's a top dog to get knocked down a peg or two, but it feels like the meta cycle for Grimkin was really rapid this time. Am I just losing touch with time, or do you think that that's a fair statement?
No, I think you're right. Like, going into the WTC in September, I felt like Grimkin were top three for sure. But I think that the fact that Infernals players kind of figured out the matchup, and then every release after then has been something that's good into the things that Grimkin can bring. Like, and like, because of the way the releases have been, it's not just this one faction gets elevated by the release. Like, Flames elevates three factions, Bedfellows elevates two factions, Asphyxius elevates three factions. So it means that every release that's like good into Grimkin means not one thing gets better, but like three or four things get better matchups all of a sudden. It just kind of snowballed. Now that we've seen the, like, these fast, hard-hitting infantry teams settle, I think that it's kind of snowballed really fast.
Yeah, it is. I think that that is kind of, I guess, kind of an interesting situation where it did make that change as rapidly as it did. So the second question that he had was about Siege 1. Have you had much experience in that matchup?
I haven't played it in a while. I would say, in general, if I was looking to Magic Bullet Siege 1, I'd probably write an Old Witch Dark Menagerie list.
Okay, and what would be the reasoning behind that? What would you have in it, and what would you be trying to do?
So, in general, we're trying to use Windstorm to shut down its threat ranges. The reason I want to do it in Dark Menagerie is because my concern is that even with reduced threat ranges, Siege can kill too many Naysayers for Bump to be able to take that game. Whereas in DM, you can bring like the standard brick with a death knell, so everything's tanky already. Get a couple shield guards to mitigate some of the big shots, and still use Windstorm to push this brick up the table. And I feel like the combination of these things should mean that by the time he alphas, you're close enough that you can clap back immediately and clean up his fairly squishy army with whatever he doesn't kill.
Okay, so next question is, this one is going to be from Imperial. He says, on paper, it seems that Aurora 1 or Aurora 2 Strange Bedfellows poses a problem for Grimkin. How big of a problem issue is this for Grimkin, and do they have an answer? What is that answer, if they do?
Okay, so Strange Bedfellows never really made it to Europe before lockdown. Uh-huh. So like, anything I have on this matchup is going to be theory, because I haven't gone around to playing on War Table yet. My general take is that while everything hits hard, I'm not convinced that you can't play Dreamer into that theme. Like, I understand that, like, everything hits really hard, but there's not actually that much of it. But on the basis that you can't, you're probably looking for a Wanderer bump, because most of what they want to do is fight up close, and you'll almost always be able to play Starcross to enough stuff to matter. And that theme in that list specifically is very deceptive in how much infantry it can kill when it gets going.
Okay, well, to be determined. I'm It's kind of interesting, and I've heard a lot of different builds so far for Strange Bedfellows, and so I'm kind of curious what ends up becoming popular and whether or not the themeless ends up becoming very dominant in the meta.
Yeah, so in my head, when someone says Strange Bedfellows, I'm picturing 3 units of Negation Angels, 2 or 3 units of Clockwork Angels, Hypatia, Asphyxius, and then a battle group.
Mm-hmm.
Which for Aurora 1 is probably a couple heavies and for awesome negators, and for Aurora 2 is probably the range jack, the Tessellator.
I'm trying to remember what there was one of the I know that Watt was on the podcast and said that a local's been playing, I think it might have been in Crix, was playing Strange Bedfellows and just had like a swarm of light jacks that could Alpha Strike really hard and it was really hard to deal with.
But yeah, I see that. My eternal frustration is that you can't actually play Strange Bedfellows with Crix. You just take the Crix caster, I believe. Like, yeah. It doesn't appear for Crix themes anywhere, so. I would imagine that's more Tenebra 2. She gives the flank.
Yeah.
With her feet. Yeah, that would be pretty good into Dark Menagerie, but I feel like it would fall over into Bump, just because you're bringing very squishy models that will get hosed by Naysayers really fast.
So Greylord Dave says, was the Clockatress nerf either premature or too heavy?
I mean, the Clockatress was a negative play experience. I think that we have to admit that. Probably not, on balance. Like, I think maybe they could have not taken away the Stubble Stutter. I think for me, taking away Paralysis was a big one, because Paralysis was an effect that model had no right to have on an auto succeed spray if you hit. No, I don't think so. It's not the nerf I would have liked. I was an advocate of just changing Dark Menagerie to be Living War Beasts and not really touching the Clockatress other than taking away Paralysis. But I understand that that would need a bit more rebalancing work on DM, so I get it.
Yeah, I mean, it felt like when they did the nerf, it kind of felt to me like, you know, it's kind of a little bit of a sop to the players to help them feel a little bit better about the matchup, but it's still a really good beast, and I don't feel like, you know, of the things that you listed about, you know, why Grimkin might be or struggling right now, I think in the hierarchy of things that are causing an issue, it feels like the Clockatress nerf is pretty low in that hierarchy. I mean, am I wrong on that, or is that?
No, I think you're right. I think it's quite interesting if you go back and look at all the nerfs in Mark 3, you could probably at this point undo pretty much all of them and it wouldn't break the game anymore. Like, if you think about, you could probably revert Denny 1, give Ghost Feet Point Blank back, and the theme wouldn't be particularly overpowered. You could put Haley 2's feet back, and maybe that's the only one that might be a bit too much. Like, I think that retrospectively, a lot of the nerfs seem quite harsh, but were probably justified at the time, and Clockatrice might be in that group. Because it was definitely, like, it was toxic to play against if it got slightly lucky. And I think that it made games unfun for people. From experience, from playing Grimkin at tournaments for, like, the whole summer, there were definitely people who tilted as soon as a Clockatrice hit the table. And that's not a good thing.
Right, yeah. Alright, so next question. This is from Cutter NYC. He says, Ahoy, Ben. Number one, please bless us with your four horsey man's thoughts and inspirations.
Ooh. I think they're a good model. So my general take on the horsey man's is that they're obviously good if you put them in your list. But I don't think they help Bump do anything different. They just let it do what it already did harder. Like, they're like a win more in the matchups you already won, but I don't really think they do anything in the matchups that are hard for you that's different to what the list already did.
Mm-hmm.
I have to remind myself what their final version was. Stranglehold was shakeable, wasn't it? Yeah, it was. I'm pretty sure it was. That's obviously a big nerf from the CID version. Maybe justified, but I do kind of feel like they could have left that unshakable and it would have been fine.
Mm.
I think they're a good model, but I don't think that they help the theme win games it couldn't already win.
What about, so there are a lot of people that when, I'm trying to think of the name of Wendell, the Gremlin Wrangler.
Yes.
There are a lot of people who, you know, after having been received so many bad touches from Gremlins forms, like the prospect of having a model that can potentially do some work and then transform into a Gremlins form had people kind of agitated. what have been kind of your thoughts on that?
I forgot that model existed. I feel like when I'm writing a Dark Menagerie list, I'm not wanting to pay effectively 4 points for a Gremlin Swarm that might do something.
Uh-huh.
Like, if I'm bringing Gremlin Swarms, it's either because I've got 3 points left or I'm bringing two for a free slot, and it's mostly the second one. I just, like, 4 points are quite hard to find in Dark Menagerie. And I think that if I found them, I'm not sure Weird Wendell is the model I'd reached for. I also think that it's the same thing where all the stuff that's come out is chock full of magic weapons and models yourself. Like, I just don't. I think Gremlin Swarms are very killable now in a way that they weren't even this time last year. Although, when Wendell came out, that probably wasn't true yet.
Right.
I just think Gremlin Swarms are too killable for me to get excited about paying 1 point more for a model that's going to do something some games and then maybe turn into a Gremlin Swarm if it doesn't get RFP'd.
Yeah, I mean, it does. When Grimkin was one of the factions that I've kind of done a progression through the mini factions. And so, you know, I played Grimkin when they released. I played Crucible Guard. I'm playing Infernals. And like, there was definitely a time when it felt like the Gremlins Swarms were just kind of like had this reign of terror upon the meta that people kind of struggled with how they were going to deal with them. But it feels like that's a lot less the case now.
Yeah, definitely. Like, there's so many magic weapons. There's an objective on every scenario in the upcoming Steamroller Pocket too. I think they've gone from being models that won new matchups for no reason at all to things that are just good.
Yeah. Which, I mean, that seems pretty reasonable.
Yeah, for sure. I think that no one noticed how unreasonable Gremlin Swarms were because they weren't. They were only FA2 and they were in Minions, and Minions weren't very common. But when there were suddenly four of them on the table and they had Incorporeal and Stealth and randomly hit Warjacks for 6 damage, that was suddenly quite obnoxious.
Right. Okay, so second question from Cutter New York City, NYC. He says, I want to include the Wastelander in a competitive pairing and would enjoy hearing your thoughts on its inclusion.
It's a really good model. You could definitely just slot it into probably a bump
Real quick, it's a little bit of a newer model, and there's probably a lot of listeners who don't remember too much about it. Could you give any type of quick overview on it?
Yeah, sure. So he's Def 15. He's got Blade Shield, which is +2 defense against range attacks. And he's got a funky variation on the Shield Guard rule, where he Shield Guards when your opponent declares the attack, not after they've hit, they then have to roll to it against the Wastelander. And every time he's missed by a range attack, the attack instead directly hits the enemy model. And that's every time, not just once per turn. And in addition to this better Shield Guard rule, he also has a POW 10 Weapon Master Magical Sword with Decapitation and Sprint.
Okay.
Which is a pretty obnoxious weapon to have on a model with that defensive ability as well.
So, alright, so you gave that overview, and go ahead and go in again to... You basically were saying that he's good in lots of places?
Yeah, he's one of those models that's just generically good. I'd be more likely to reach for him in Bump than Dark Menagerie, mostly because of the points in Dark Menagerie being so tight and the fact that I think Hermit is really good in that list, and you probably want Carianna, maybe the Frog. Whereas in Bump, you have a bit more flexibility in what you take. There's some neat stuff you can do. So the Frog, Baron Tunglix, the cloud that he can center on himself, you can fit a 30 mil base completely within to get concealment, which means your Wastelander goes up to Def 19 against range for his deflection when he's shield guarding attacks, which is pretty sweet. If you want actual synergies for him, you need a debuff caster, so like King of Nothing or Heretic? No. King of Nothing or Old Witch. But I think in general, you can just kind of put him in any list. The Wanderer is also pretty cute because Defense 15 baseline with Starcrossed and access to Monkey Countercharge makes him obnoxious in melee as well as at range.
Okay. So, next question from Cutter NYC. He says, how should Grimkin approach the Striker 2 Flames matchup in the context of a solo Masters pairing?
Okay, so there's two... There's two answers to this. It depends a lot on the striker list. If there are no Thamurai advocates, i.e. no access to Entropic Force, then you're going to play Dark Menagerie, and you want to hold Sacrifice for Striker's feat turn, because it means that if he feats, he can't just charge in, spread damage, then kill everything, because you get to heal up across the board. So you can kind of try and bait him into kind of a charge alpha into feat where he doesn't quite kill anything fully. Then you get a Sacrifice in the middle of the turn and too much stuff survives for him to finish the game off. If he does have Thamurai advocates, I think that you're probably still playing Dark Menagerie on the basis of Striker 2 feated Legion of Lost Souls being able to munch through your Naslayer so fast, and the fact that if you like try not to feign death so you're not knocked down, then they just get killed over two turns by Thamurai Archons. So I think you're always playing Dark Menagerie. But I think if there's Thamurai advocates, you have to be very much aware of where he can apply Entropic Force, and maybe even not play Sacrifice if there's a pair of them, and just try and grind out with something like Pandemonium Fortune's Path, maybe. Because obviously, your other big arcana, Labyrinth, isn't really going to be great either because of how far everything threats. The other option, if you've got, say, a King of Nothing DM list, or possibly King Bump, is that Striker doesn't have any cloud solutions on the charge. He only solves for clouds by running in and feating. And if he's only alphaing with his feat attacks and not his charge attacks into a brick, then he may struggle to do enough damage to finish the game off.
Okay. Final question from Cutter NYC. He says, beyond Striker 2 Flames, what do you believe are the other noteworthy boogeymen in the meta for Grimkin?
Infernals pairs that have an Omadamos list and are well piloted. Infernals pairs that have an Agathon list, if you don't have, say, the Child to tank it out. I think Fiona Flames is scarier than Striker 2. And I think until I see evidence otherwise, you probably have to respect Strange Bedfellows as well. Flag 2 Doom Reavers when it appears.
Yeah. Okay. One of the factions that's been kind of considered traditionally one of the stronger factions of late has been Menoth. Have you felt like Grimkin is doing okay into that matchup usually?
The Harvey game was Grimkin was traditionally Harbinger's very worst matchup in the entire game. It's gotten better for her, but I think it's still Grimkin's game. But you have to play it in a certain way, and that is if you're playing Dark Menagerie into it, you have to be extremely aggressive, because the thing with Harbinger is if you give her three or four turns, she can kind of pick you apart, but you can't really alpha your army in one turn because her list doesn't hit that hard in one go. Provided she has Adjudicator, if she has heavies, then her list is kind of too slow, and you can pick her apart of it because she doesn't have the same options into you. Sirenia is probably harder for you. I still think that you can probably just kind of pick her apart using Artifice of Deviation to shut down her heavy threat ranges because she doesn't have a solution for Pathfinder, and you should be able to grind through most Menoth lists. The only one I'd really watch out for would be Krios 3, who definitely can kill Dark Menagerie, but may not have the tools to play Bump.
Okay. His final follow-up question with it, he says, how does this meta affect list design compared to previous metas?
It's interesting. I think that there's like two big things you have to solve for if you're designing for this meta. You have to solve for generic, fast, single wound infantry spam that deals with clouds. The main archetypes that I worry about there are Striker 2 and Vlad 2, because they both have a version of cloud solutions, even if Striker 2 is a bit budget, and they go really far and hit really hard. And you also have to kind of consider Infernals and either solve for Infernals or accept that you can't solve for Infernals and just not. Which is kind of an approach I have been taking recently. I've just been kind of writing a list that I can be like, well, I'll beat most Infernals players and I'll lose to the really good ones, and that's okay.
Okay.
I think that if you're willing to throw Infernals out the bed, this meta is actually not too bad to write lists for. You just solve for single infantry and you write a list that can play Harbinger okay.
So if you were going to a non-team tournament this weekend, what would your current pairing likely look like?
So I've been playing around with Crix, partly for fun and partly because I just fancied a change. My pairing probably looks like Scar 1 Coven, because I think that Coven have one of the best tool sets in the faction to handle these fast infantry matchups by bringing a bunch of guns and having their feet. And Scar 1 can pick up Grimkin, which I don't think Coven can play. She can pick up Harbinger, kind of okay, and she's got the closest to a good Infernals game in Crix. If I was going with Grimkin, I think I would take Dreamer Wanderer, because I think that Wanderer, as much as I love the King of Nothing, I think Wanderer of all the bump casters has the best set of overall tools into a melee infantry meta with Starcrossed and Spray for threat range so he can get to stuff he needs to get to. And Dreamer is still Dreamer. She's still really good. There's still a lot of stuff that you can just play Dreamer into and grind out.
Yeah.
And like that list has always had this way of being able to win matchups it doesn't look like it should be able to win. And I think that might still hold true into some Flames lists and stuff like Bedfellows. I think Dreamer might just win when she probably shouldn't.
Mm. So you had you just mentioned how you love the King of Nothing, and one thing I'm a little bit curious about with him and you is, so I'll confess that when Grimkin initially released, there were like, I had a lot of friends and there were a lot of people online who were like kind of infatuated with the King of Nothing. And I was just kind of like, why though? I mean, you could, there's all these other casters that look better than him right now. And as more models released, then I was like, okay, yes, I'm ready to play King of Nothing and I'm excited about him. But were you kind of on his bandwagon from the get go, or were you kind of like me where it took a few releases before you were excited about him?
I really wanted him to be good at release. I played an awful game on stream at the UK Nationals the year Grimkin came out against the late Mark Ellis, where I played a King of Nothing list that was a bunch of light Warbeast, and boy did it suck. I think that a lot of people went that way trying to build into his trump and a bunch of light right. and sacrifice, and it just never yeah. quite worked. I tried David Beauchamp's list, the one that had like six skin and moans and no death knell. And that was okay, but he definitely missed something. Like, that was something that he needed to be like good. Although I did like that the assassination always exists.
Mm-hmm.
I like casters who always have an out when the game's not going well, and the King's assassination was kind of always a 5%er if nothing else was working for you.
Okay.
And then like I kind of shelved him for a bit and didn't really think about Bump. I didn't really think about casters that weren't my WTC pair that year. And then when this year came around and Bump got its group of releases and became an actually legitimate, really good theme, I kind of went through and tested a few bump casters, and I settled on King because I felt at the time he was my best Infernal drop. I kind of felt like we didn't super care about Infernals at the WTC, but because a couple good teams had Infernals players, we had to have a couple people who could play it. And I felt like King of Nothing had the best chance of doing that in my faction. So that's why I picked him. I ended up just kind of falling in love with the shenanigans you can do with Sands of Fate and Ashes to Ashes.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So next question. This is from Seto Midor. First, he says, why have we seen players move on to other factions from Grimkin? Is it burnout after the faction has been strong and popular for a long time, or is the current meta unfavorable to Grimkin?
I think it's both. I think that, for me, the top Grimkin players when I think of Grimkin are myself, Golly, Matt Golliger, and Pat Dunford. Those are the three that I kind of jump out when you say Grimkin players.
Uh-huh.
And I know that like we'd all been long-time Grimkin players. I think that was probably true for a lot of the Kin players that were around. They'd all been kind of on since release. And there was definitely some burnout, at least on the part of the English guys. Pat's burnout was more spectacular in that he quit. But I think it was a mixture of that, the new stuff coming out, and the fact that Grimkin weren't going to get any new stuff. And the faction does feel a bit weak right now. So for me, it's both.
Yeah.
I got burnt out, but I also definitely said when the WTC was still happening this year to my team that I would play Grimkin if we thought it needed to happen. But at no point has that felt like a thing that was a possibility.
His next question is, what's the biggest learning experience / skill from playing Grimkin for so long that you have brought with you to other factions?
Learning that I don't have to win the game every turn. So I think that there's this kind of, when you're playing the game, I think people get too caught up in doing too much stuff in one turn. And playing Dreamer for such a long time really taught me that sometimes it was okay to kill what was in front of me and pass turn and just not lose.
Mm.
That was a thing that I kind of needed to drill into my head over a lot of games. But learning that an acceptable turn just consists of killing the models I had access to, not losing the game, and being ready for next turn was a big thing for me. That made a big difference.
And was there anything with Grimkin in particular that helped you learn this, or was it just kind of a game lesson in general that you were needed for.
So Grimkin was the first time I've really ground a faction, and it was over kind of... That was the other thing I picked up. It was the ability to, like, just sit down and play hundreds of games of the same list over and over again. It was just kind of over hundreds of Dreamer games. I kind of worked out, but a lot of the time, if I got to turn 7, I just kind of won because my army was still there and theirs wasn't. And it just taught me that, especially when playing Bricks, but in general, it's very easy to get caught up doing too much stuff in a turn. And, like, being quick on the clock and creating clock pressure and just not losing is generally just a good thing to do if you're not sure what else to do.
So, next question from Zap Brannigan. He says, are there any Arcana that you think play particularly well into Flames or Infernals?
Huh, a lot of focus on Flames and Infernals. That's interesting. If there's no Thamurite Advocates in Flames, I think that Sacrifice is fine into both of these matchups. Because while Infernals do have access to Entropic Force, it's often only on one or two models, and they often get sacrificed early. I don't hate Labyrinth into Infernals. In general, you can kind of predict the kill pressure in that faction, because it's based on like models that have quite predictable threat ranges, and you can kind of know if you can play Labyrinth or not. Into Flames is much trickier. Sacrifice is excellent if there's no Thamurite Advocates, but if there are, it's very much based on the caster. Like, if it's like a Fiona or a Striker 2, they can probably Entropic Force what they have to. If it's maybe a Zakova, you can probably still play Sacrifice. I think Labyrinth is generally good into lists like that when they're not Striker 2 or Fiona that are hitting you from too far away. I'd probably reach for Pandemonium against Striker, and failing that, Fortune's Path or Ill Omens are always good. Probably Fortune's Path, just because it's an always good Arcana.
Mm-hmm.
With the caveat that if you're playing like a Wanderer bump list, I'd probably work for Ill Omens, just to skew the defense a little bit.
I guess real quick, a little side detour. I'm a little curious on your opinion on some of the Trump Arcana. I think that when I first started playing Grimkin, because of the names nomenclature of like, oh, this is my Trump Arcana, and then I have my two kind of supplementary Arcana, I kind of went into it with the expectation that my Trump Arcana was going to be the strongest of the three, and that there was also the possibility that, for example, with King of Nothing, you'd kind of mentioned that people were looking at kind of building around the Trump Arcana. And then my perception kind of shifted over time, where a lot of times it felt like the Trump Arcana was probably the weakest of the three Arcana that I would take in a game. But I guess I'm kind of curious on what your experiences have been with that, and what have been kind of your takes on the different Trump Arcanas.
From the top, I think Dreamer's Trump is obviously not particularly good, especially with the list you're bringing that doesn't have many warrior models. The thing that I've done most with Dreamer's Arcana is knock down enemy casters when they have to come and kill Gremlin Swarms.
Mm-hmm.
That was it was a staple of like the really early Grimkin, was that someone would charge in a caster to kill a Gremlin Swarm. They'd kill it and I'd knock them down and then they'd panic.
Right.
Aside from that, it comes up one game in 15 and it's good. Otherwise, it's just kind of a thing that you can do sometimes. The thing with Kings, like you said, I think that people built for it, and I think that was a trap. It's very good when it works, but it won't work often. I think you just kind of build the list you build and play it opportunistically when you know you're not playing any other Arcana that turn. And like when you're planning your games as Grimkin, you can generally pick, like, you'll generally think, well, I'm playing this Arcana turn 2, I probably sacrifice on turn 3, and then like I've got my Trump at some point, I guess.
Yeah.
That was how it went with especially like Dreamer and King, where I was like, this Trump is just kind of, I throw it in when I've got a chance, but I kind of know that the other two are better and I don't want to waste my Arcana sort for that turn on this very mediocre Trump.
I remember my god, like the early days of Grimkin list building and like the Facebook groups, etc., like there were people who would be like, okay, I've solved the King of Nothing, I'm bringing him with like 20 Krabbits. And
I own 8 Krabbits for that reason.
And you know, my opponent's just gonna kill all these Krabbits and I'm gonna do all this damage, etc. And then you're kind of like, well, what happens if you play your Trump Arcana and they stop attacking and then you're left with a swarm of Krabbits for the rest of the game?
That was always the problem.
It's like, oh, yeah, I guess that's an issue, isn't it?
You always had this dream where they'd, like, kill 20 Kravitz and all the trenches would die, and they never did. They just kind of ignore them, and you went, ah, oh, shit. Yeah. That's a problem.
Okay, and sorry, so going forward, I'll try to, when I'll call out one of the Trump Arcana and explain what it does so that people have a little bit of point of reference. So the King of Nothing, they kill a beast, and it will deal out some damage towards the enemy.
Interestingly, it deals D3 damage to the enemy that kills you, then D3 damage to the D3 nearest enemies with no range limit.
Yes.
Which doesn't come up often, but it did really annoy Jake Wilstrop once.
Well, anything that annoys Jake is going to be worthwhile, obviously.
Truly.
So next we have the Heretic. His is the trigger is kill a warrior model. And then you basically get a prey that can be movable when you kill the model that has prey on it, or the unit, right?
Yeah, it's just prey. You can move it to things in Heretic's control. It's obviously very good.
Yeah.
Like, +2/+2 is a powerful effect. If you're playing Bump, the trigger is easily accessible. If you're playing Dark Menagerie, the trigger is Gremlin Swarms, which is also kind of fine. It's a good Arcana.
It's actually one of the best Trump Arcana at this point, it feels like.
It's objectively probably the best, but yeah. I do think that the Wanderers, who we'll get to in a minute, is actually more important for his kit.
Sure, yeah, yeah. So we can go ahead and go on to the Wanderer. If he's targeted by an attack or damage?
Damage. It's damaged.
Damaged, that's right. So if he gets damaged by an attack, he gets a free transfer, and then he can move to one of his waypoint markers.
Yeah, and interestingly, he doesn't have to transfer. So if he's got no transfer targets, he can still take the teleport.
Right, yeah. Okay, so you said that this is potentially the most important of them. Can you go ahead and expound a little bit on that?
Yeah, so Wanderer's kit is deceptive, because it looks pretty kind of bland on paper. He has Starcrossed with only Folk Fury 6. He's only got a 12-inch control for Starcrossed. And he'll only be able to camp 3 if he does it, and he probably wants to do other stuff. He's got a nice spray, but it's a spray 10. It gives beacon and flare on stuff it hits. Again, a powerful effect, but on a spray 10 with no access to reposition. The key to Wanderer's kit is that he wants to stand in the very front of your army, in the very middle of the table, and be the furthest model forward. And the Trump Arcana is what lets him do this. Because having the option to teleport back to a road marker in the middle of an assassination run makes an already somewhat hard to kill caster really hard to kill. And it means if your opponent's going for it, it's a big, complicated run that's got so many points of failure because of all the different things Grimkin can do reactively. And it means that the fact that it exists means that he just kind of gets to chill in the center of the table and apply these effects that would be hard to apply if he didn't have that Arcana.
Yeah, I've played a fair bit of the Wanderer, and he's a surprisingly fun caster to play, but. I think it is an act of a fair slash accurate thing to say that his Trump Arcana is very integral to kind of what you're trying to do with him. And also there's a lot of times where it's almost like you're wanting to bait the opponent into like you're dangling the Wanderer out there on a string and like, come and get him. And you almost want them to waste attacks and resources on that because it's just going to fail.
Yeah. Like, between Starcrossed, the fact that he might be stumbling drunk from a madcap, which makes him a stumbler drunk and steady. And then, like, monkey countercharges, potential teleport, transfers, clockatrice animi. There's so much stuff that could go wrong when you're trying to kill him. You kind of want people to go for it because it's so unlikely to work. One of my favorite games of War Machine I've ever played was against Matt McWaters at the Sioux. And we played the Wanderer Bump Mirror. And there was a turn where his Wanderer started my turn in melee with my Wanderer, and I did the maths and worked out that I probably couldn't kill him and just ran away, which was very fun.
So next one is the Child. It adds a Fury to the battle group, all the models in the battle group.
Yep.
I think the trigger is they get damaged, something in the battle group gets
damaged. Damage. Yes.
Yeah. One of the battle group models takes damage.
Yeah. Again, it's obviously very good. It makes all your beasts hit really hard. It means that, like, Clockatrices are suddenly much more threatening at Fury 4. A Skinnamones at Fury 5 with access to Abuse can probably kill any model in the world. A niche use is that it gives the child plus one fury, so she can cast Force Hammer twice, which is sometimes useful, which you couldn't do otherwise. It lets Kravitz jump and then boost both their attacks. It's a good Arcana.
Yeah,
I can't fault it. It's really solid. It's one of those things that helps her do what she does better. It makes her Beast Brick much more efficient for a turn.
And I believe that's all of them besides Old Witch 3, who doesn't have one. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's all of them.
Okay. So, I guess any closing thoughts on the Trump Arcana?
I same as you, when I started the faction, I expected them to be like the main thing you did, then the other Arcana would be small effects. I think it's interesting that the caster that stuck out the most is probably the one whose Trump is the worst. I think that kind of shows that it's not necessarily that important because of how powerful the other Arcana are.
I still probably get less work out of the King's Arcana.
That's fair.
But they're both, like, at no point should you be taking either of those casters because of their Trump Arcana.
I think the thing for me is, every game the King's Arcana will do something, even if it's just one damage to a model. And there'll be some games where Dreamer's Arcana won't do anything.
Yeah.
Because, like, the turns they trigger it, you'll have other stuff to do. Whereas you almost always have a beast alive when your other Arcana are gone, so you'll get to do D3 damage for a couple things. That's not nothing.
All right. Well, we're going to go ahead and pause here on this episode. And before we leave, wanted to remind everyone to check out discountgamelink.com and Muse on Minis. And we're able to supply you guys with your gaming needs at great prices, so check that out. Ben, we wanted to thank you for sharing your time with us, sharing your knowledge and expertise.
Thanks for inviting me.
And finally, thank you to all the Patreon backers who helped support the show and make all this possible. So thank you very much, and you guys are awesome.